this is Sheila Bender, and you are listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life. Today we have with us Port Townsend resident Mariah Moustakas, who considers herself a hidden writer and artist. She has presented readings and workshops over the years, but hasn't really submitted her work for publication. Much of her writing has a personal connection to Greece and to her own childhood. She was born and raised in Poughkeepsie, New York. Her father was from the Greek Aegean island of Andros, and her mother was of Greek, Scottish, and Seneca Native American heritage. Mariah spoke only Greek until entering the first grade. Married at 21, she lived off and on in Greece for several years in the 1970s. She started drawing and creating art before age 5 and began writing poetry and stories while in the third grade. She did not reach college until her late 30s, earning a scholarship to Vassar College, where she graduated with an English degree in 1979. While at Vassar, Mariah was in an invitational class, and she had the opportunity to learn from well-known poets and writers such as Elizabeth Bishop, Philip Levine, and John Cheever. As I said, she thinks of herself as a hidden writer and artist, and I'm sure there are very many such people in our community and beyond. So I want to welcome you today to our program, Mariah.
Thank you so much, Sheila. It's really great to be here, and I feel as if I'm edging myself out into the public.
And you certainly are, because the public will be listening to you streaming as well as being broadcast, and then, of course, in a permanent leak that the radio station makes of the podcast. So it'll be an exciting debut for you. We'll get to talking about why you have remained until now hidden, but maybe we should start off with a poem that you'd like to read and maybe tell us a little bit about why and why now.
This poem is called Question for the White Batman, and it's about the difficulty of actually getting out where you'd like to be. Summer, and it's cold inside, though the sun shines through the leaded window. An old passerby, Chinese, with a white beard that stands away from his chest, waves a staff at me. White bats are painted on his cobalt blue robe. He has something to say, but his words are lost to the breeze that lifts the corner of his robe, puffing it into a triangular sail. He's going somewhere, stepping lightly on the walk with his padded slippers. I want to ask him how I can find a robe like his, how I can dare wear it with padded slippers in the glaring sun of Main Street. By the time I get to the door, he's gone. My hand is still on the doorknob. My nails are blue.
What would you have done if you could wear a robe like that and padded slippers on Main Street?
I haven't gotten to that point yet, but I do wear ethnic clothing.
You would feel brave. Want to read one more before we talk a little bit about being a hidden artist?
Yes. One of the reasons why I wanted to come today was because many women are in positions where they're really trying to get out. I had a very difficult childhood and a very abusive first marriage. And this poem is called Woven Woman Breaking Free. Somewhere she read about the yellow wallpaper with its crawling woman and was happy that she was not mad. She married and married again and went to dinner, stomach tight, eating too fast and wishing she was not woven into the tapestries of her mother's histories. The men across the table changed and were always the same. She tried to read their spirits, but only loneliness fell from their eyes. She left or they left, but she stayed knotted into the fringes of her own carpets, trod on but enduring, in place but disheveled. No one could make her lie just so for too long. She wanted to be free, but turned like the rockfish in the net, binding deeper as her breath grew weak. One day she made it halfway out, slipping through the black strands and into the red and green. She hoped to slither past that dimension into the broad expanse of her own acceptance.
Wow.
This is meant to mean pluriform of all mothers in history, all the way we've been trod on, abused, and we still, I feel, are not totally equal. It's very difficult for women to move out of what they've known and what is expected of them.
Maybe we could pause here and talk a little bit about how poetry helps us say what is previously unsayable for us. Did it take a lot of courage to write that poem, or was it compelling and you just sat down and wrote it?
It's very strange that these do come, as you know, internally. They come out, and I've never felt like I was being brave to write it. Mm. Yet when I read it, I thought, I should listen to myself here.
I think so. The setting is so clear. The dinner parties, the people are always the same, lying in one position, not wanting to be that way. And then the image of the fish slithering through the netting and finally making it, very, very strong and powerful. And I think that when poetry speaks to us in metaphor, and it speaks to us by direct images, there it's unforgettable. And hopefully we do remember what our smart selves could write in poetry, although it takes maybe a longer time to enact.
I have another poem that relates to that. It's called Release from the Vortex. And I want to say that sometimes after I've written a poem, it may not be at the same time, it may be a while later, I find myself painting a painting that actually is the poem. Release from the Vortex. The poet fell into the vortex at birth, not knowing fluid living would no longer be hers. She tried to float but sank into the space that too many people told her was light, right, and the way to go. She believed it with her words and a tilt of her head until her soul sprang out of her mouth and her tongue spoke snakes, vomiting cliches and truisms until they were lying dead at her bare feet. And she, released from the vortex, ate weeds and wrote and painted under the moon, penniless and rich as a Nile queen.
Mm. Thank you. I find your poetry very, very encouraging. So I'd like to talk a little bit with you just about what might be the reasons one keeps their art hidden, and especially a person who's been lucky enough, like you have been, to study with poets who are quite out there, quite well published. What is it about art, do you think, that maybe does encourage a kind of shyness?
That's a very difficult question to answer. Sometimes I feel I've just been lazy. Sometimes I feel that I've never actually painted or written for any audience but myself. And I think once I finished it, it didn't make any difference where it was. But I've come to realize that many of the things are so universal that it's really important for me to say something.
And you have said it, and to share what you've said with other people. I agree. And did you have any feeling, though, like some people do, that even though the poems achieved what you needed them to achieve for you, did you ever think that, because of the kind of schooling you had at Vassar, that maybe you would be too self-critical if you were thinking about writing for an audience?
I never felt that I would be worried about anyone criticizing me, which is strange because that would probably be a major reason for most people.
It would be, but I'm thinking if you had the fortitude to go to school at 30 to be an undergraduate, then maybe you already came with that fortitude. And there must have been a connection between what you learned there and how you could learn to express your own insights.
Well, because I was older and I've been writing since I was a child, I actually had quite a body of work written, and that is what got me into Vassar as a student, because I was a scholarship student. I was the first student in my mid-30s, not traditional age, to be accepted as a full-time scholarship student. I was actually an experiment.
So what were your relationships with the other students like?
It was great.
Tell us about it.
I had a lot of fun with them, and I guess they didn't pay attention to my age.
Aha. Well, I think that poetry is ageless, and I'm glad to see that was reflected in your classes. But I know from a previous conversation that you did take on a certain kind of role in which you stood up for students in the class. Do you want to say anything about that? I think it's important because I think that it also goes along with this, what's in you today about sharing your poetry now after so many years. Had that spark when you were in school as a 30-year-old and the others were 18 to 20, I imagine?
Yeah, I was actually closer to 40.
Ah, okay.
By the time I graduated, and I was in an invitational class, and there were very few people who were doing poetry for a thesis. At that time, we had to have a thesis to graduate. And we met with a famous poet. Three of us met with him, and he was extremely critical and very demeaning and made one of the students cry. And finally, I just had to speak up and tell him, don't compare us to William Carlos Williams, because we just want to know if this is good enough for a thesis. And because we complained, he was never invited back to the college again.
Did he change his way of talking with you and the others?
He never got a chance to.
Oh, so how did you come, the group of you, to decide whether you had poems that were good enough for a thesis?
We took what we'd been working on in the invitational class. We were all seniors. Our advisor thought that they were very well written, and we just wanted to see what he thought.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why that was true of, I'm going to guess what generation poet, based on my own training here at the University of Washington, but there seems to have been a way of being that these professors had, which was very condescending and very unnurturing in my experience. I've had that experience too. And a kind of almost fear that they would be, I mean, I'm reaching here for my own explanation, but perhaps a little fear that younger people coming up might overtake the poetry world? Do you think so?
Anything's possible, because I know that in any of the arts, either dancing or painting, I do feel that there might be an edge of that in some people.
Yes, we have to be careful and not slander a whole group of people, but it does seem that poets are kind of in different pods around the country, kind of elected to these, in quotes, leadership positions. And then the rest of the world of poetry in that area may actually be submerged a little bit. I think that's less so on the West Coast, and I'm happy to have entered poetry myself on the West Coast. And here you are on the East Coast, where I think that kind of selectivism is a lot more defined. So I'm happy that you're here on the West Coast, and I'm very happy that you're reading your poems to us. So how about another one?
Oh, thank you. This relates to my background. My father is from, as we said, the island of Andros in the Aegean. He taught me to dance when I was a child. This is called the Andros Dance. The balo is a traditional dance that has a three-quarter time, and that's why it's reflected in this poem. The four-step beat, like a lilting bridal march, my father taught me on those sun-hazy Sundays that smelled of avolemono soup. And the way I turned my handkerchief, he said his mother did so when she danced. I finally meet her when I'm grown. We dance for her anniversary, guests toast us with homemade wine. She sits watching, clapping in time with the band, one-legged now but smiling like Demeter. My feet fly as my father's fly, and we stamp the yielding earth.
A beautiful event. How did you not meet her until you were grown?
Because my father left Greece as a child when he was about 12. Mm. His first time back, he had not been there for 40 years.
Ooh.
And in 1960 was my first chance to go visit with him. And by then, of course, I was 21 years old, and I had never had a chance to meet either of my grandparents.
And this is your grandmother who's watching you dance, and she has only one leg at this point.
Yeah, she's lost her leg, and I was told that she was the best dancer in the area when she was young.
Oh, it just gives me chills to think of you performing for her and what that must have felt like to her to know that her skill with dancing had been passed on and that her son had made sure that his daughter knew the dance. It's beautiful.
You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend. Today, Sheila is speaking with Port Townsend hidden poet and artist, Mariah Moustakas.
So I want to ask you a little bit about Elizabeth Bishop, because she did teach at the University of Washington, although you met her and worked with her at Vassar. She's a very important figure these days to many of us who write. And I'm wondering if you have any little tidbits to tell us about her.
Yes. One of my favorite things was when I was very young, she was in every anthology with the fish. And it might have been a Norton anthology. And on the bottom, it said, a minor American poet Now, I was in my teens, and I was offended by the fact that there would be a little blurb on the bottom to what I thought was a wonderful poem. And so I started being interested in her work, and by great luck, she came to Vassar for our class, and she stayed 3 or 4 days. She graduated from Vassar in 1934, and we were meeting with her, and she was sitting and waiting, and we were all gathered around in a very casual room. She wasn't speaking to anyone. And finally, I thought, someone has to say something. So I went up and I actually knelt down beside her and introduced myself. And she said, I'm so glad you came to say something because I was too shy to start the class. And she was lovely. She was very supportive and she read so beautifully. She did do a reading for a public reading. And it was so wonderful to hear her speak. She died a few months after that.
So she seems like she might have been something of a role model to you as a woman poet. Any thoughts on that?
Yes. I loved her work, and when I met her, I was just enchanted by her. I thought she was just absolutely wonderful.
Do you remember anything specific, something you saw or gestures she made or what she talked about?
She was very quiet. She had a wonderful demeanor that made you want to go near her and want to talk to her. She was an unassuming genius.
What a wonderful phrase, an unassuming genius. I like that. Any other of your teachers that were remarkable to you?
I was very lucky because I first went to the community college and had a teacher there who was absolutely wonderful and was very supportive of my work. And then I went to Vassar, and my advisor, who was Bill Gifford, was not only a writer, not of poetry, he wrote novels and stories, but also a very kind, understanding person who would, on what we thought were insignificant work, would sit and write almost an essay to us and give us this marvelous feedback. And I think from him, I learned how to criticize my own work and bring it up to where I felt it should be.
I think you also might have learned from him the value of a fabulous support from a person you admire. And I know that you had a teaching career in which you encouraged younger people. And I wonder what that was like for you, working with kids and poetry.
Primarily, I taught people who were like 16 to 21 years old. And many of them were in difficult situations. Some were from a mid-secure facility and were now in a group home. So not only was I helping them establish some self-esteem, but I also was trying to help them academically and trying to encourage any creativity that they had. I think just being respectful, listening, never raising your voice, no matter how stark something may be that they're saying to you, and finding what interests a person.
Did you find poetry among those kids?
Some writing. I did have one student who was writing. I had a young man who drew beautifully, but no one ever knew it, and he had no math skills. He was 18, and I was able to teach him math because we were drawing.
How did that work? That sounds fabulous.
It's very well. He liked to draw birds and animals, and we just started making shapes and taught him fractions. He had no idea what they were.
Wow. So you have shared your heart and your skill with so many people and bringing out the hidden in them. So I hope today becomes a landmark in your life of sharing your poetry. That said, when you talked about the difficulties that the children had faced and you've talked about the difficulties women have faced, I feel like that's where poetry connects us, not only in the admiration of beauty and the slowing down of time so that we really pay attention, but in the really speaking about the difficult things that so often we don't talk about, that we do hide from others. So I think you have another poem to read that addresses that to some degree.
I know that many people have lost children. My daughter died shortly after she was born. She was my first daughter. I had a son who was 2. And had always had difficult pregnancies, so this is a very wanted child. Luckily, after a a few years, I did have another daughter who lived, and this is the poem. Pink is for girls. The pink pearl and white coverall, softly woven and tied with pom-poms, stretches on my baby like a second skin. 6 months girl sits on the sand-dry earth under a flower box of carnations, red like the ribbon tied to a tendril of her budding hair. The sun lengthens the lashes dancing on her blushed face. She pokes the clay near the daisy roots transplanted from a field where sheep graze, then grabs a fist of baby's breath, the petals hidden by her plump fingers. 4 years ago, a pink suit like hers held her sister, laid in a florist box. Her long lashes were one with ivory cheeks over eyes never changed to brown, leaving hearts pinked through and a rose marble stone.
Mm. Beautiful and hard to revisit. I mean, one of the things we do with poetry is revisit our lives. And I have tears as I speak to you. I love that this poem starts with the liveliness of the new daughter and then remembers, because inside our families are all of our families, whether they're living or not. And it's beautiful. And the link of the pink. Lovely. Thank you. And yeah. I'm sure anyone who's lost a child will thank you for expressing that. I'm going to change subjects here to ask you if there are poets that, besides the ones you studied with, who you love to revisit or are reading now. Any come to mind?
Strangely, I am a huge Shakespeare buff.
All right.
And I just love it. I love the cadence, the poetry in all the lines of the plays. And I'm not such a fan of the sonnets as much. I really find a lot of the poetry itself in the plays. And I find that very visceral. Right now I'm reading with a group, and it is emotional. Uh-huh. It's very emotional. I think when I read my own work or when I read someone else's work, I really internalize it. I, like you said, I relive my own things, but I also am very empathetic to what I'm reading written by someone else.
So how does it work, the reading Shakespeare with other people?
This particular class, we keep changing every scene, so you never know who's going to be who.
Ah.
It's a little bit strange, but it's fun.
So it's out loud reading.
Oh, yes. Yes, we're reading out loud, right. And I think all of us try to be a little bit of a ham when we're reading. Uh-huh.
Do you discuss it as well?
Absolutely. A lot of a discussion.
So what's the most current Shakespeare play that you're reading?
We are finishing Twelfth Night, and which is a wonderful comedy. We're interspersing them because it's just too much to do the tragedies all in a row. But we are starting King Lear tonight, which I'm already saddened by. It's such a powerful play.
And how long does it take to read the play?
We never know.
Oh.
We always think we're going to do one in a week or in 2 weeks, but we have so much to say.
Yes.
We're behind as it is.
Right. So how do people join this group? Is it a private group? Is it?
Oh, no, it's open. It's at the library, and it's free, and anyone who wants to can come.
Do people have to have their own copy of Shakespeare?
Yes.
Yes.
I really recommend having a nice, large Shakespeare with annotation.
Do you find that you rehearse before you go there?
Oh, yes. I reread the plays. I read some criticism. I try to watch a number of different versions on YouTube. One has to be up on it. People are really involved.
So if people wanted to join this group, they would contact the library and plan on going once a week.
It's every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks. That sounds good, because it sounds like a bit of prep, the way you're describing it, and then bring their copy of Shakespeare.
Yes.
Yes. I'm thinking of my own sitting on my bookshelf, very big, fat, heavy book.
I have mine from Vassar of the Riverside. I think it's 5 pounds.
All right. Well, we get our exercise walking to the library with our heavy books. Why don't we talk just a little bit more about what you think might come next for you now that you have decided to share poetry and art And I'll tell you, having listened to you at the beginning of the program and then listened to your poems, and especially the one about the vortex, I'm thinking, wouldn't it be lovely to see your work exhibited, your art, with a poem per art piece?
I don't know if I could do one for each one, because I feel that might be a little forced. However, I've done a series of seven women, historical women, that did have a poem, but the first one sold at a competition that I had entered, and I felt that the poem actually went with that one.
Mm-hmm. So is that image lost to you, or could you photograph
it? I don't have it anymore.
Oh. Do you know where it went?
It was purchased by someone on Cape Cod.
Oh, well, because I'm envisioning a book of your paintings with your poetry.
I did think of that, because I do have a large number of poems that would lend themselves to that. And because I'm also an artist and I draw, I would really see something like that in pen and ink.
Mm. Well, not to put too much pressure on you, but since you've come out of the closet, I'd love you to stay out and to share your work with us. So I see that there's one more poem in front of you, and if you wanted to introduce it, let us know anything about it. We could talk about it after.
Oh, thank you. And again, I just want to thank you for everything you've said to me. You're very encouraging. This is called Recesses. And this is a poem because, as I said, I am in my 70s. And we do go through very difficult times. I was lucky enough now, a few years ago, to meet someone that means the world to me. And this is the poem I wrote. Recesses. In the midday of content, a rage of sorrow flits into my thoughts. I've earned my aging with losses whose remembrances beat against the sun of my husband's embrace.
How beautiful. And like with the poem about your daughter, you tell us that nothing's lost. Life changes, new life comes into it, new relationships, but that doesn't mean the old ones are lost. And that's what brings tears to me. Any parting words for our listening audience?
I'm just hoping that other women will look into their closets, look into the boxes that they've hidden that I might be tied up with a ribbon, that they think isn't worth anything, and that they would have the courage to come out and share it.
Thank you, Mariah. We'll believe you. And I just want to add that there are so many opportunities for open mics, for living rooms, everywhere that we can really share our hearts. Thank you so much for being with us.
I thank you.
In Conversation is produced by Sheila Bender and edited by Charlie Fleischman.